to New York Comic Con. Thank you all for coming down today. Hi.
Je suis la bête.
He is, too. Not many of us have an actual con named after us, unless your name is Comic, I guess.
He was lovely, wasn't he?
He was a very nice guy. We had a good time that weekend. So I would be delighted to introduce to you Sir Grant Morrison.
So who was that Morrison going first thing? Was anybody there?
Yeah!
Whoa! See, he was there.
Must I call you sir, by the way?
No, you can call me sir.
Did you have a lovely meeting, tea with the Queen?
I haven't met the Queen yet. I'm meeting the Queen in 2 weeks' time, next week sometime, shortly. 25th of October, I'm meeting Her Majesty. God bless her.
Have a good year. So we're gonna talk for a few minutes, and then I know you've got lots of questions. So we'll shortly open up the floor, not in a literal sense, because that would be demonic and weird. Grant has said flash photography is fine. Did you want to do a little blue steel for some photographs, or you want to wait till later?
Well, I'd prefer to do Le Tigre, which is actually my favorite expression.
So I thought we would start by talking about something happy.
Okay. What could that be?
What on earth could that be? I love the idea. It sounds like an adaptation of A Christmas Carol set in a meth lab. Which
that was kind of that was where I was coming from, because I felt that really Scrooge didn't encounter enough methamphetamines in that story, and it really was time that he was subjected to some of the hardest core drugs available to mankind in the 21st century.
So talk about happy a little bit. Where did this rather bizarre idea come from?
As I say, I mean, a lot of people probably heard this story because it's becoming tedious. I've told it 1,000 times, but it came from an old song by the Hollies. I was listening to this thing, and it was a song called Pegasus, and it's a really creepy song. And I quite like the Hollies, and I don't want these guys to hear me continually saying your songs are creepy, guys, because I actually quite enjoy a few of their songs, but this song is particularly creepy. And it's about a flying horse, apparently, Pegasus. And if you take drugs, you see this flying horse, which I think is what the song's about. But there's a middle eight in it, which has got a kind of pervert quality. And suddenly, into my head came the notion of this. Imagine this thing is real, because the song is so sickening and saccharine, it really makes you want to vomit when you listen to it. And I thought, but imagine this animal was real, because, you know, really, Pegasus shouldn't make me want to vomit. But imagine it did. So I'd suddenly the notion of if you were the most cynical man on earth, suddenly stuck with this little cartoon horse who's indefatigably cheerful and really irritating. If you can imagine like Martin Lawrence as Ruby Rod doing this thing. So I kind of saw it as that, and it just seemed like the ultimate, almost like a buddy movie idea of having these complete opposites plunged into this ridiculous story involving paedophile Santa Clauses and drugs and sex.
And the adaptation for the screen, have I been hearing about, is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, the RZA from Wu-Tang, yeah. RZA, fuck yeah.
How did you meet RZA?
Well, he got in touch, he was interested, he'd seen the comic, and I met him in Los Angeles, and the first thing we started talking about was UFOs. The minute we sat down, the first word that comes out of my mouth, so about the UFOs then? And the two of us were instantly bonded from that moment on. So, yeah, I mean, obviously he's a cool guy, he's kind of interested in a lot of the same stuff I am, and he had a take on the material and a viewpoint in the material that I really like. So, yeah, I mean, he's attached to it now. We'll see what happens next. It'd be interesting to see that. I think it'd be pretty good.
You have spent your career, as far as I can tell, burning down and rebuilding superheroes. Mm-hmm. Why is that something that's interesting to you?
That's just a thing I identify with them. You know, and I think anyone identifies with superheroes if you think about it enough. You know, in our own stories, we all feel like superheroes. You know, our love stories are the greatest love stories ever. When we buy a new house, it's the greatest buying of a new house ever. So, in our own lives, we kind of feel superhuman. And I love superhero stories because they so directly address those feelings. You know, everything in a superhero comic is symbolic. And it's about how we live. You know, I don't see them as fantasy stories at all, so maybe that's just my problem. But to me, they're actually social realism. You can talk about how we feel in a way that just realism can't handle, realism can't deal with it, realism doesn't deal with it, the fantastic worlds that we all have inside our heads and the space within that little mess of bone there. You know, like black and white 1960s films about living in a cold water apartment don't really tell you how it feels to live in a cold water apartment, because when you do live in a cold water apartment, it generally feels like a palace. You know, I remember when I was a kid, we were poor, but my house felt like a palace. So I kind of, that's what I love about superhero stories. Everything's a palace, everyone's special, everyone's amazing, but at the same time, it allows us to look at the problems that we have and the world we live in.
We had a really interesting conversation the last time we spoke. It was a room like this, but I don't remember where or when. It's like a Gershwin song. And you were talking about Superman and how Superman is recreated for the audience that needs him, be it a man of the people.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you could talk about that. I thought it was really interesting.
I think it just seems to be a function of characters like Superman and Batman, and to a lesser extent, maybe even James Bond. See, the characters that have been around for a long, long time, they have always proven themselves to be pretty adaptable. You know, they can fit into anything. If you look at Superman as an example, Superman starts out in 1938 as a socialist fighter for justice. He's quite clearly kind of left-wing guy. He fights against the power, he fights against the man, he fights against City Hall. You give that 10 years and suddenly there's a war on, and Superman's riding missiles down into the face of the Japanese. And it's a completely different character, but yet there's something about that core Superman that stays the same. In the 50s, suddenly he's a suburban dad with his own house and his own pets and his own relatives and all these ridiculous problems that he has. In the 60s, he's a cosmic seeker. He's helping Indians over land rights issues. He's fighting against polluters, you know, and so on through the decades. So he's responded to basically what is, in each case, what is our idea of the ultimate man. And Superman has always played that part. If you look at him in the 70s, our idea of the ultimate man is a kind of Italianate, Victor Mature looking character who's very bombastic. You know, Superman in the 70s is constantly punching people. And, you felt that, didn't you? You know, and he's constantly aggressive. You know, if Batman's the same, every time they beat somebody up, it's like, hey, your jaw's like a soap ball, buddy. It's okay, Batman, you didn't need to tell me. You're fucking Batman. I'm just some baldy henchman. Of course you're going to kick my ass. But if you look at the characters, they're quite surprisingly macho in the 70s. So, I mean, for me, it's always interesting the way each generation, what do they look up to? You know, and the current Superman is very much, it's kind of half Christ, half, you know, Martin Luther King. It's a very strange, this is what we look up to now.
The idea that he becomes what his nation needs reminds me of King Arthur a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that he has become a folk hero.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I think characters like Superman and Batman have the potential to persist for centuries even. You know, I think they've got that. Something like Batman is such a powerful archetype and such a refinement of an archetype that I think there's a good chance it will last, like Robin Hood and King Arthur have lasted.
The idea of building things from the ground up, you're getting the opportunity to do that in spades in your project, Multiversity. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that?
Well, Multiversity is something I've been working on for 6 years, so I've been putting a lot of effort into this thing. But it's the DC Multiverse. It's all those parallel worlds where, you know, in one Superman's a raccoon and the other one's like, you know, he's whatever he is, he's a tree. But it's that kind of thing, you know, I used to love these things. Superman is a tree, he's pretty good. The Justice League of Ents. And what would Ents be like now? They'd be really miserable, because that was them back in the day in Lord of the Rings, when they're all like warriors and stuff. Imagine them now, where they just live in houses and they kind of have to pay rent. So, okay, that's my next comic.
But yeah, wrote that down.
But yeah, Multiversity, that's a good idea about the Ents. Who owns Ents?
Talk amongst yourselves.
This is like my notebook. All I've got in my notebook is things that say man blows up. And this one says Ents in flats. Apartments are right, since I'm in America. Ents in apartments, there we go. That'll be my next 12-issue miniseries. So yeah, the... The Multiversity is just, it's eight books, six of them are set on different parallel universes, so there's a Nazi Justice League, there's the kind of Charlton heroes done in the style of Watchmen, there's Captain Marvel stuff, and we have two kind of bookends the bookends function really well as bookends. So that's what it is, and as I say, I've been working on it for 6 years. Most comics, you're doing them in one go, you know, it's kind of, you write them down, you send them in, you don't have much time to do any editing on it. But this one, I've actually sat down and worked it, so I'm quite pleased. And I'm hoping it doesn't sound like Chinese Democracy.
You also, along with Guillermo del Toro, made an announcement of some work that you're going to be doing with Legendary Comics. Yeah. Annihilator. Mm-hmm. Talk about Annihilator.
Well, again, this is stuff that I've been building up over the past few years doing superhero stuff. I've been kind of building up a bunch of these creator-owned projects in the background. And one of the things I wanted to do was just take on a bunch of different genres. So, you know, I had Joe the Barbarian came out, and that was the fantasy genre. You know, We Three was the animal genre. So this is kind of in the same vein of those books that I was doing. This one's a big science fiction Hollywood story. And it's about a Hollywood screenwriter who's been given the task of doing this big tentpole franchise called Annihilator. And he's writing this script, and it suddenly turns out that the FBI come to his door and say, we just had a man appear in the Tevatron. Tevatron was reopened in order to create a black hole, and out of this black hole, we've got this man. Have you any idea why he wants to speak to you? And the lead character says, well, this is the main guy in my screenplay, this is my hero, and suddenly he's real. So it's kind of, it's not so much of one of those, I like to do stories where it's questioning the boundaries of reality and fantasy, but this one's kind of what happens when you make up a story and suddenly it comes into your life, you know, and kind of the way that the Invisibles come into my life a little bit. This is looking at what happens when the lead character makes what's ostensibly a deal with the devil, and out of that he encounters this Byronic, satanic figure who changes his entire life.
And the character's name, he's got a great name.
Which one?
Max.
Max Lomax, yeah. I invented this character because we wanted to do something that was as cool as Batman. So I went back to Fantomas and all those early kind of anti-heroes, you know, from French Surrealists and stuff like that, and I was looking at Diabolique and Criminal, who were like Italian Fumetti Negri. The Italians in the 60s did this thing called Fumetti Negri, which was black comic books. And the word black was used there in the sense of black magic, because the characters that they wrote about were these absolutely incorrigible bastards. You know, so Criminal was this guy who wore a suit that looked like a skeleton, and he was constantly this. He just went about robbing banks and raping people just for the fun of it. So I was looking at characters like that and thinking, let's create the ultimate rebel character, the ultimate satanic, Byronic, man in black character, and that's what Nomax is. He's Batman plus.
The idea of the identity and the hidden identity, I think, is something that you return to a lot. The layer beneath the layer.
Well, I guess to me it's just how things feel, you know. There is the persona we present to the world, there's everything underneath, there's the fantasies that go on in our heads, which I've talked about earlier, you know, the way we look at ourselves and see ourselves in relation to the world. So yeah, all my work has kind of been about that. And this one in particular, because it's set in Hollywood, and it's about Hollywood, it's kind of, that's the meat of it, you know, artifice versus authenticity, and which one's best.
Well, perhaps you have a few questions you'd like to ask?
Yeah, let's just get questions. Just go up and start asking questions.
Form a line right behind the microphone. You with your hand up. If you'd like to ask a question, form a line.
I'm not going to do that Bane voice, you know, Bane.
No, Batman. You're a part of the
What is that, Bane?
I'm not going to break your back, Batman.
Say your name and where you're from, and go ahead and ask your question.
Andrew Kai from Maryland.
Hi, Andrew.
Have you ever heard of a theory called fictional realism?
What's that?
Have you ever heard of a theory called fictional realism?
Fictional realism? I haven't heard of a theory of it, but I've probably been practicing it all my life. What is the theory?
That basically, everything that we perceive as fiction exists.
it's not a theory that I've heard, but yeah, I mean, I've obviously heard of parallel universes and everything we possibly perceive. Fucking hell, imagine it. Imagine Big Bird being real. He loves Mitt Romney, apparently. So, no, I haven't heard that, but yeah, I mean, it's obviously an interesting theory. I mean, I've been reading up a lot about string theory and parallel universes, and the potential for everything to be real is there, but, you know, I mean, fiction is fiction to me. That's...
Okay.
Thank you. Whose theory was it?
I don't know.
That's okay. I'll claim it as my own then. Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm Ryan Fisher from Kingston, Pennsylvania. Two things. First, thanks for making Superman easy to cosplay.
Oh, thank you. It's easy, isn't it? It's just Denim's a pair of boots.
Because it's a lot. My question is, I was wondering if your opinion on the ending of Final Crisis, Superman Beyond 2 into Final Crisis 7, if your feelings about that have changed since the reboot? Or the relaunch of the New 52 initiative.
Can you remind me what my feelings were?
just because it seems that going back and reading the end of Final Crisis, that, you know, a couple of years later, it's like Mandrake 1.
That's one way of looking at it, man. Honestly, I think things just have to change and move on. I don't think Mandrake won, because you got Scott Snyder and Jeff Lemire and all these amazing new creators out of this thing, and I think it's worth it for those people, honestly. You know, I'm so glad to see new people come in that you feel a bit like, well, I've got to try harder, you know. And that's great for me. So, no, I don't think Mandrake won. Mandrake can never win. As long as people keep telling stories, Mandrake doesn't win. He only wins when you run out of stories to tell. So... I hope that never happens to you.
Thank you.
Hi, Greg.
Hey!
Just wanted to remind you. Michael from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Hey, Michael.
When do we get more
stuff? Did you have a Matt Swamp thing? He used to live there, didn't
he? He's still there.
Apparently that guy says he's real.
Exactly.
Somewhere he's real, isn't he? Something must be real somewhere.
Well, I hope Arcane doesn't sneak into my bedroom, but when are we getting more Sega?
Oh, right. I've written the first one, I'm kind of into the second one now. It's just a case of, you know, Cameron Stewart's obviously, I think he's doing one of the multiversities. I really want him to do the Captain Marvel one. So it's a case of kind of juggling those two books. But yeah, I mean, it's underway.
It's happening.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Thank definitely. Grant. Thank you.
Hey, Grant. I'm David. I'm from here.
Hey, Dave. Hi. Just right there. Just don't let any of these fuckers take your spot. That's how walls begin.
Yeah. Every year, this place gets louder and louder, and I come up and yell at the neighbors. I have a Batman RIP question. I asked this to Mike Marks like 2 years ago,
okay.
Your editor, and he said, I have no idea you had the guy Grant.
All right.
it was something that was so. He was in there, but you never really mentioned it, but I know you have a whole backstory to it, because you always do that. Every time you showed Batmite.
Yeah.
You had the little... Yes, what was that?
See, now I'm going to ruin it for you.
It was this little green monster with bright green eyes, and I have an idea what it is, but I want to know what it is.
Tell me what you think it is, I'll tell you
to it. Because Batmite says, well, I'm the personification of your rational mind, so I kind of got at that point, his mind had been fractured by the Zerman R, the programming and stuff like that, I sort of got the little spidery guy was like, certification of that.
It's even worse.
It is.
What the little thing was, I had this idea that basically the creatures in the fifth dimension were so appalling to look at that they couldn't show themselves to humans. And it's not because they're bad, it's just because if we were to look at them, we'd kind of fall apart and shit ourselves. And so Batman very kindly disguises himself as a childlike version of Batman. It's like something a kid would imagine. But over the corner, we constantly see these kind of creepy hands and eyes looking at.
And so it's like the part of him is like just peeking.
That's the real part of him. Batman's just glimpsing this. What the fuck is that? You know, it's really something very unpleasant. He's crawling around. And my idea was that even if you saw Batman from the back, the thing would be on the front, so you can never quite see it.
I think he did that a couple.
Yeah. So I mean. What you're seeing is a face of something that's in the fifth dimension and it's really unpleasant to look at. So it's trying its best to make itself look pleasant to us, you know, which is kind of what imaginary friends do.
So was it really in his head?
Yeah, well, but as I said, the fifth dimension is in your head. And think about this, right? How big is your head? What, 3 inches across? 4 inches across? Now, think of an entire universe. Fits, doesn't it? Think of two universes. Hey, they still fit. Think of three. In fact, think of a multiversity, and they still fit. Now, how does that work? What's in there? It's a much higher dimension. We can fit things in there that can't fit in a same size box. So I was actually genuinely saying that I do honestly believe that the imagination is the fifth dimension, in the sense that we can imagine higher scales, we can imagine any amount of things, and they all fit into a tiny little box that shouldn't contain much more than a brain. So to me, the whole into the fifth dimension, we can even look into the past. You know, the mind is like a telescope that can look at the past. It's the only way to reach the past, is to look at it down there. So I was kind of actually quite genuinely proposing the notion that the fifth dimension is inside.
Awesome, thank you.
You're welcome, thank you.
That is wonderful. Hey, Grant, I'm Ben Murphy from Cambridge, New York, and I have two questions. One, is there going to be a Joe the Barbarian sequel?
Nah, there probably won't be a sequel. I thought of a sequel, because I was going to do one where his entire school gets taken over by these things. And it was like, what would happen if every kid in the school was trapped in the same landscape that he was? But then I just didn't bother.
Second question is, what's your opinion on the whole Cyclops becoming Dark Phoenix thing in ABX?
I don't know, I didn't see it because I kind of live in the country and the only comics I get are the DC ones that come in the box. So I haven't actually seen it, but I read about it online and it's just, that ain't my Scott Summers. That's not my guy. But, you know, I'm not going to say, those guys are working with those characters, they're trying to make something new, they're trying to push the story along, so I'm fine with it, but I didn't recognise him in that. I don't think he would have ever done any of those things, but maybe he's being possessed. He's always getting possessed, that guy. I think he likes it.
Thanks, Ryan.
You're welcome.
Hey, Graham.
Hey,
I'm from New Jersey.
Hi, huh?
I really enjoyed your introduction to the fourth rollout of us. I was wondering if you could talk about why you didn't really appreciate Kirby's work when you first became aware of it when you were younger, and how appreciating it changed your career or your influence.
Yeah, I think when you're a kid, you've kind of, I mean, obviously everybody here is into comics, but do you remember when you were young and you would look at the artwork with millions of lines on it and you thought that was so much better? You know, if it had 1,000 lines to draw some guy's face, then that was better than Alex Toth, who was doing 3 lines. So I was just a dumb kid. I mean, I was a huge fan of Neil Adams, and that to me was the ultimate comic book art. So when you look at Jack Kirby by comparison, and you're 12 years old, Kirby looks quite crude. But the older you get, you start to realise that Kirby's, it's like music. You know, Kirby's pure heavy metal. When Kirby plays the guitar, it's... And it's fucking amazing, you know, and the sheer scale, the ideas, the older I got, the more I appreciated the fact that every single panel, every single sentence had a new idea, and Kirby would just waste them, and I really appreciated that, because I thought that's what comics were about, waste your ideas, don't fucking see people that say, oh, you should have developed that. You know, developing an idea for 6 issues, who cares, man? Just fucking throw it in a sentence and pass by and make up another one. So to me that was pure comics. And the other stuff is like writing for movies where you have one idea and you just develop it. But Kirby just give you another idea, whoa, there's another comic. And that to me is pure comics. I think that's the way comics should be, you know, and every single sentence should inspire another 10,000 stories, and everyone who reads that should want to write it. So that's what I got from him. The older I got, the better Kirby gets, and the older you get, the better he gets all the time, until you really, really start to appreciate that guy. So I was just dumb. I was just stupid. So.
Thank you.
Hey.
Hi, Greg. I'm from New Jersey as well.
Hi, huh?
First of all, I want to say thanks for you, X-Men.
You're welcome.
My favorite of all the X-Men.
Seems like a long time ago now, but thank you.
So my question is, I noticed on your bio that your map is listed as So I happen to wonder, is there anything we might expect from you in the future that would be put on the screen?
Ask Hollywood. I've written like 3 movies. I've been paid for them. We paid quite well for them, but they've never been produced. I also just finished up the Dinosaurs vs. Aliens screenplay with Barry Sonnenfeld. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But these guys have been very resistant to me. I don't know why. You know, I'd love to see a CGI movie or a filth movie or any of those things. But honestly, they'll catch up. You know, things are getting a little bit more psychedelic again, so hopefully they'll catch up. But certainly, as I said, I've been doing it, but there are no fruits of it yet. So who knows? Maybe never. Maybe there will be. But I don't know.
I'm rooting for you.
Yeah, thank you. Hiya.
Hey, point out, Ron in Oregon.
How you doing?
When you talk about Dr. Hurt from Batman, I love the idea that you play on like the whole in Batman's, you know, kind of emotional self, being embodied by Hurt. And then Morrison kind of was talking about integral theory, and it kind of dawned on me that is also a whole of the W-H-O-L-E. And you played on that idea of the W as like the W with her also.
Good.
And so with Batman, I was just kind of wondering, is that, is Batman incorporated? Like the idea of this Batman whole, kind of like an antithesis to her and like this.
I hadn't actually thought of all of that, but yeah, I mean, I like to think that if that's in there, then it must have been a kind of a subconscious thing. But certainly, when Hurt does appear again, you know, and I said this when we were in Las Vegas, and a lot of people thought, oh my God, it's going to be a big Dr. Hurt story. It's not really a big story, but he's going to come back into it. And as you say, yeah, the whole idea of Batman Incorporated representing all these different versions of Batman, and they're all getting together. This entire story is about that being utterly destroyed and why that might not work ultimately. So yeah, Dr. Hurt does make an appearance at the end, but it's in a slightly different way from what I think people may be expecting. But thank you. Thanks.
Hi.
Hi, Matt.
My name is James. I'm from New Jersey.
Hey, James.
I was wondering, how is your sense in 2 months we're either going to be not here or completely disappointed? How has your opinion of the December 21st, 22nd apocalypse changed since writing The Invisibles?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, I never had an opinion of it. It always sounded something quite interesting. But the trouble is, the end of the world has never arrived. they were talking about the end of the world in the year 1000, and they all went up in hills. You know, Neil Gaiman even wrote a graphic novel about this with Dave McKean. But the end of the world just doesn't come. So I was never convinced by it. I mean, it's a beautiful theory, and yes, information does seem to double, but it's not like that. You know, it's like the Zeno's paradox, where they say that you can never cross a finish line in a race because you always have to cross half the distance. So no matter how hard you try, you'll never reach the finish line. But we know that in the real world that's not true. It doesn't work like that. That's a theory. And I began to think that maybe the 2012 stuff is a theory, particularly when I heard that. You know, obviously, we know about the Mayan calendar, but I was more excited by Terence McKenna's Time Wave Zero theory, and he basically applied it was the King Wen sequence of the I Ching, and he turned it into a fractal, and when you put it onto history, it kind of maps really neatly onto history, and that fractal runs out on December the 22nd, 2012, as well. Or so I thought, because it turns out that Terence McKenna twisted the truth in order to tie it into the Mayan calendar. So therefore, it's not true, it's made up, it's poetry, it's beautiful poetry, but it's poetry, and no, I don't think the world's going to end. I think all our ideas about apocalypse come from the fact that we know that we're all going to die in the end, and we project our mortality onto culture and onto civilization, and we imagine that there's going to come a day where it all comes to an end, and somehow we might be there to see that. Honestly, I don't think it will happen like that. You know, I think the world is going to keep going, and that's even harder to deal with, because when there's no apocalypse, what the hell are we going to do? Because we better start building the Starship Enterprise. Yeah, it's an excuse for a party, but what isn't?
Hey,
good,
how
are you?
Sean from Brooklyn. My question is, one of the current themes of your work is how fiction kind of, or rather the characters interact with the actual world, whether it be Buddy Baker becoming aware of the reader, yep. etc. My question is, one of the more prestigious things, or rather one of the more ambitious things that you try to do is basically this idea to bring the DC universe to life, as we can say. So my question is, where are we with that now, and did Dan DiDio basically make that still happen?
No, I don't, I mean, I tried to bring the DC universe to life. I remember reading a really good piece online, and some guy had done a blog thing, and he said, Grant Morrison brought the DC universe to life, but it fell in love with Geoff Johns. And that's it. Yeah, I thought it's alive, but it doesn't fancy me. You're welcome.
Maybe one next time, maybe Image this time.
Yeah, maybe.
How's it going?
Hey, good.
My name's Tom Cirola. I'm producing a feature film and a pop record. And, well, if I wanted to ask your opinion.
Good work, man.
Thank you. I wanted to ask your opinion as you are juggling all these different projects and yet working intimately with some of them, maybe more than others. Can you talk a little bit about, in your experience, what kind of logistical struggles you've had? Maybe you have an anecdote about how you've made it work or you've kept it. Kept it your own, but trusted other people that you work with enough to branch out?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to say that because I just do my stuff and send it in, you know, and I don't have much connection with my wife. Does all the hard work on the front of juggling that stuff. You know, I just sit in my room and write, which is quite easy for me to do. Juggling projects is just something you've got to do. You'll find your own way of doing it, you know, and then the more you take on and the more popular you become, the more people want you to do stuff. And if you're like me, you just keep saying yes. And suddenly you'll find yourself with 20 things to do. And what that means is that you don't go to sleep for 7 days and you stay up and you drink lots of vodka. And you become miserable. And everything becomes about the art and not about your personality. And you can forget yourself and say goodbye to everything you thought you would one day become. And
you're starting to work then.
Yeah, it's good. And your work will go out and do all the hard talking and negotiating for you. So really, honestly, you'll do it because you will have no option. And that's all I can say. You'll find your own ways of doing it. I used lots of drink. But yeah, I mean, it's a very personal thing, you know. It depends how many projects you eventually get to do. I got to the point where I was doubling like 15 things in 2010. And it was on the verge of actual mental illness.
So when do you say no?
When do you say no?
Yeah.
You don't say no. Because if you start out as a poor kid and you're a freelance writer, then you can't say no to anything because something you might never get another offer. And that's the trouble. So sorry, mate.
No,
yeah, just get ready to work 7 days a week, 24 hours, and enjoy it. Hey.
Hi, my name's Kyle Lawrence. I'm from New Jersey. One of my favorite
runs. Nice star from
All right, one of my favorite runs is your Animal Man.
Yeah.
Where did you just sort of get the idea to take it in that incredibly batshit insane direction?
Well, with Animal Man, it was just I'd always wanted to do that character when I was a kid because none of the other kids knew who he was. So every time we played at Super, he was like, I'm Animal Man! He can do anything. He can turn into an elephant and kick your ass. I really liked Animal Man, but when I got into doing the comic book, I was kind of really involved in the whole animal rights thing. And it just seemed like so obvious that the Animal Man could be an outlet for kind of some of the feelings that I had about that. And that's what it became. So yeah, it was just really about the life that I was leading, you know, and my cat died right in the middle of it, so that added another strand to it. And it was just, you know, I really like animals. I think they're bloody great, you know, and I've got a lot of good animal friends, so I kind of wanted to give them a good comic.
Arthur, what do you think of the current Animal Man run?
I like it. I really like Jeff Lemire's stuff. The only thing I don't like about Animal Man that's not Jeff's fault is that concept of the red. You know, and as I say, I've got to say this, I like what Jeff's doing. I don't want, because I saw it reported a couple of weeks ago, the whole Grant Morrison says Jeff Lemire's terrible. No, I never liked the concept of the red because I thought it was like a borrowing from Swamp Thing. And Animal Man already had the morphogenetic field and this kind of scientific explanation for his powers. So I didn't like the fact that they made him into almost a kind of sub-swamp thing. And that was never, I found it an unappealing concept, and I wish they would just get rid of it. But other than that, I really like what he's doing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Hi.
Hey, I'm Eric from Jersey. One of the things I love about your comics is that your appreciation of the history of the comics and you integrate that into it. And particularly with Batman, I want to know if you feel there's any gaps in your reading history, or you mostly read it all. And side note, can you name like a handful of people you feel like major Batman contributors to Mark Runner?
Well, Batman, I mean, obviously that goes back to like 1939, so there's a lot of material there. But I'm really pleased. I was given this book by Alan Kistler, who writes stuff on News and Armour, and he gave me this book of Batman trivia. So a few months ago, I got a book of Marvel trivia, and I couldn't answer a single question. I'm going through this thing, it's like, fucking hell, it's like Peter Parker did this in 1976. No concept, no idea. But I went through the Batman trivia book and I could answer like 80% of the questions, so I'm really, I feel really pleased with myself.
But,
hey! Hey, Aaron, how you doing? Yes, thanks for that book. I actually managed to answer all the questions. So, yeah, I mean, who's been great? Daniel Neal's been great. Frank Miller's been the greatest. Alan Moon, Brian Boland, Len Wein, I could go through all of them. Bill Finger, more than anyone else. The greatest Batman writer ever. You know, and that guy. Again, because that stuff's nostalgia, you tend to read it in the sense that it's like one remove. But if you actually read it as just pure pulp storytelling, Bill Finger was just such an inventive mind. You know, he was writing that stuff for decades, and he just kept coming up with new brilliant ideas all the time. So if anyone deserves the praise for Batman, I think it's him more than anyone else. But you know, Batman's been lucky in that he's had some of the greatest writers and artists in comics telling his adventures. Neil Gaiman, you know, that two-part Neil Gaiman thing that he did, I really loved as well. So pretty much anything to do with Batman, you know, I love Adam West, I love fucking Schumacher, I love anything to do with Batman.
Thanks.
Hey Grant, I'm Luke, yeah. I'm from New Jersey. I know it's been a while, but are you ever going to like revisit Flex Mentallo?
But Flex was done, that was the story, you know, just kind of...
I know, it's just, Flex was a huge story for me as like a comic book fan and everything.
But imagine you come back and it was before Flex Mentallo, right?
That would be weird, but...
And it was like, you know, imagine that just between those two panels, here's what Flex went and did. Yeah, it was Kenny, he took drugs in San Francisco.
I guess, like, to go with the question of Flex Mentallo, what was really going through your head at that point in your life that made you write Flex Mentallo? Because
ecstasy and mushrooms.
That makes sense. This is not actually, that makes a lot of sense, though.
No, well, it was the 90s, man. Come on, I was a young man. But no, that's what it was, and it was kind of... I really get into that whole rave culture stuff. So my idea was to let's take the comics and do to them what all the people who were making music were doing to music. So when I was an indie kid, I was really into that kind of, you know, in the 80s I was into the Smiths and stuff. And even before that, Television Personalities and a bunch of these groups that were pre-indie basically in Britain. And I kind of wanted to take all the stuff that I loved about superheroes and subject it to that kind of, let's, you know, let's just have the beat. Let's take out all the boring stuff and just put the beat in there. So it was kind of that. It was very much inspired by the music and by the life I was leading and applying those kind of filters to the comics that I loved.
Thanks, Ben.
You're welcome.
Hi, Grant. My name is Max.
Hi.
I'm out of Boston. I'm a big fan of all your work, but I love all your theories on, like, magic and, like, rituals.
Oh, yeah.
And... yeah, you start doing them, and then, you know, these, like, weird little coincidences start happening. Like, what if, like, bad stuff happens? Do you have any advice for that?
You just, bad stuff will happen all the time, you know, especially if you're messing with it.
What if you think it's, like, somehow connected?
You just got to deal with it. Everybody has to deal with bad stuff, and especially if you brought it on yourself using magic, you're kind of asking for it. So it's, you deal with it the same way you deal with everything else. I mean, if you're dealing with specific demons, you know, I've actually had things where I've conjured up stuff into the room that I really didn't know how to get rid of, and it was very, very frightening. And with those guys, if you're actually doing real ritual magic and you come up against something that gives you the shits, the way to defeat demons is that they don't like logic. They have real trouble with logic. They don't like shapes. They don't like being put in things. And that's why in traditional ritual magic, they tend to make a triangle to trap the demon, because demons hate lines and they hate logic and they hate angles. So if you can give a demon a shape, it doesn't like it. And that's how I used to deal with them. Basically talk them down. They're really, really easy to talk out of existence. If you apply logic to them and you start saying, well, what are you actually? And then they say, well, I'm a demon. I say, so that means God exists. You know, so if God exists, you're very vulnerable right now, aren't you? You know? And stuff like that, they just do not like logic. If you basically conjure up stuff that gives you bad life feelings, then you have to deal with that in the same way you deal with everything else, you know, anti-anxiety drugs and alcohol.
Hi, my name is Tewin from New Jersey. I was wondering if you're going to go back to revisit 18 Days, if you're going to do a comic series or a movie.
Yeah, I'd love to do some of it. It started out being it was supposed to be a 22-part web animation, and then that kind of fell through. So I'd done all the work, and it was one of the things I enjoyed most in my life was going through that book and finally getting the Mahabharata and understanding the structure of it and being able to work with it. And I'd love them to do something. I mean, the last thing I know is that those guys were trying to sell it as a movie somewhere. So, you know, it's still out there. It's just something I'm not pursuing right now. But I'd love to finish it off because we've some great ideas for it.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Hi, Greg. My name is Alex. I'm from New Jersey. I have two questions for you. Is there any hope for a collaboration with Gerard Way?
We collaborated a couple of weeks ago in Las Vegas on I wrote a story and he did the music for it, so that was the first collaboration. But yeah, I mean, we're good friends. I'd like to think that we might do something in the future.
Like comic,
I don't know. I mean, he doesn't really need me. I mean, I think that guy's smart. He doesn't need me to get a ball with him. But I'd love to do something that's maybe more music and comics and visuals and something a bit more multimedia, as they call it.
That sounds awesome. The other thing I had was I draw a lot of inspiration from your work when I'm writing, and I think about like your work, especially in the film, which is probably my favorite comic.
Yeah, it's my favorite as well. So.
And there's this idea that every writer has a core idea, like this one thing, one core message at the end of every story that they want to tell the world. So, taking all your work as a whole, Filth, Happy, Batman, Superman, what would your one message be?
Find the others, spread the love, that's it. You know, take whatever you got from me, pass it on, keep passing it on, you know, and that's all it's about. It's just a baton, it's a relay race, you know, and we all, you know, I inspire you, someone inspired me, you inspire the next guy, whoa, we keep going, you know.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hi, Grant.
Hi,
thank you for your work. I'm Nikolai Kovic. I'm also from New Jersey.
Hey, Nikolai.
Hey, and I actually just gave a lecture this past week on the superhero comic. It was too expensive, of course, but regardless, I used some of your work in the class, and I had some, I put out the idea at the end that, you know, to come back, that the superhero idea is proposed as a living idea to inspire, etc. I had a lot of, not negative feedback, but a lot of pushback to that.
Because
people said, well, Batman is violent,
Yeah, but all you have to say is, well, yes, it's possible. I mean, because I've had the same thing. People say to me, but don't really. You know, Alan Moore will say that superheroes just represent American foreign policy, and that ultimately it's quite a pernicious notion. That the idea that Superman's stronger than everyone else, and he goes in and punches them and solves the problem. And that's true, because any symbol can represent anything, but is it useful? You know, and to me it's much more useful to see superheroes as exemplars of the best we can be. Because yeah, absolutely, there are good stories to be told about, you know, superheroes who are more like politicians. You know, Garth Ennis just wrote The Boys, and that's about what would superheroes be like if they were in the real world and they behave the way politicians and celebrities do. So yeah, that's an interesting take on it. But we've already got politicians and celebrities. What's the difference between superheroes and those people? And to me, the difference is that the superhero is a challenge to a writer. The superhero says, I am better than you. Can you live up to me? And I've always found that the attempt to live up to Superman or to Batman is ennobling in a lot of ways. So to me, it's like the only place that they are useful is there, is to ennoble us. Yeah, yes, we can drag them down, we can deconstruct them, but it takes us nowhere useful, ultimately. So to me, let's choose to place them up there and then listen to what they've got to say. So all really, when people say that, all they are is they're just expressing 21st century cynicism. And the more cynical you are, then somehow the cooler you are, and somehow the more in touch you are. But we know that's not true. Those same people who are telling you that are shitting themselves, they're scared, they're afraid. Superheroes can elevate us out of that. I think that's why they're useful, and it's the only reason they're useful. So why do anything else with them?
Yeah,
that's
a good point. And just a little related to that, I'm just curious. I remember reading an interview with you and Neil Gaiman, and he and you sort of shared this idea that a slightly mad perspective is useful in the world. And I'm just wondering if what kind of perspectives do you think are promoted in superhero comics, and how do you think they're useful to challenge the sort of repressive ideologies we're given?
Well, I think that the basic thing about superhero comics is what I constantly say in Superman, is nothing is impossible, there's always a way. And I think, you know, that's one of the, it's not a superhero thing, that's the great thing about people, that no matter what situation you can find yourself in, there tends to always be a way, you know, there's always a way of lifting your, elevating your own perspective, or thinking about it differently, or making it better, or making it more useful. And as I say, that's what they mean to me, that's the only function they have. I don't have to believe that they're real. They're real in the form of paper, and that's good enough because they can inspire people in that form. And that's what they are to me. Anything is possible. There's always a way. Those two sentences, that's what superheroes tell us.
Great. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Hi, Grant.
Yeah, loud.
I am. I'm loud already. I'm Connor, I'm from here in New York, not right here, but generally here.
Just ambiently?
Yeah, exactly, like in the general vicinity. I'm a big fan. New X-Men was coming out when I was a teenager. It was really important to me. I wanted to be on the Frost when I grew up. I'm still working on it. you know, Seven Soldiers, I don't think anyone's done anything as good at DC since, so thank you for that.
Thank you.
But my question, actually, the character I miss most is the relaunch, the New 52 stuff, is Renee Montoya. And I really, really liked what she did with her in Final Crisis. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you had any ideas for her in the future. Obviously, she can't be the question now, so yeah. It's like very up in the air, and Greg's not in DC, so I just sort of am looking for anyone who might want to pick that character up.
I don't really have any plans. I mean, as you say, in Final Crisis, I kind of wanted Montoya to join the Global Peace Agency in that book, and she could move on that way. But Greg wasn't really into it because it was too super heroic, and he wanted to keep her grounded. So for me, I always kind of felt that was Greg's character. You know, he put a lot of himself into it, and I didn't feel that it was something that I would want to change or to push her out, because it really felt so much connected to him. So really, you just have to call Greg up and demand that he's something.
I thought of him last year about it. Yeah. Yeah. Where is she? Anyway, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
For the privilege.
I'll try and slip it in somewhere.
Yeah, thank you. She's been on Missing in Action Wall for like a year now, and we'd like to know where she is.
Pretty much. She must be back in Gotham Central somewhere, surely.
Right, so thank you. Thank
all
you.
Right.
We've got about 5 minutes, so we can take a couple more questions. A
couple more.
Hi, I'm Stephen from Virginia.
Hi, Stephen.
And I was just wondering, a while back, you made some comments on Batman's sexuality. I was wondering, is it really appropriate to ascribe any kind of sexual orientation to a character who so sublimates himself into his work that he doesn't take time for those more human pursuits?
No, absolutely. I mean, the thing that happened with that, you know, Batman is absolutely gay, says Morrison. I mean, if you read Super Gods, I'd say the same thing, to come to the conclusion that, of course, Batman isn't any of these things, because he's a fictional character who's actually an adventure hero, and he's not a porn character, you know, he's not a sex story character. So we see very little of that. It's unimportant. You could tell 80 years of Batman stories, he never mentions sexuality, I think. So it's not important, but of course, I mean, Playboy wanted to go for the big headline, and it was Batman is super, 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 super sexy gay, says Grant Morrison. And now I have to defend this? Say that again.
So the idea you had in Seven Soldiers of Victory about using coincidence and appearance or appearance of coincidence and chance as a tool.
I've always felt that everything I do is about that. You know, because if you look up the dictionary definition of coincidence, it doesn't mean anything. And yet we use that word an awful lot. Coincidence is, to me, coincidence sounds like magic. You know, you can't define it for me. So yeah, I've often thought that a lot of the stuff that I write is about what we call coincidence.
My name's Gavin. I'm from New Jersey, and I really liked your angle, and it's probably what got me into comics in the first place. And I had two questions about it, sort of.
Okay.
When he got a new ongoing, were you approached at all to help with the Animal Man run that Jeff Lemire's doing?
No, not at all.
Not at all?
No.
And the second question is, did you always hate the idea of the red, even when Jamie DeLano was
Yeah, and that's when I particularly hated it, you know? Because, as I said, I like what Jeff's doing, but that concept constantly niggles me, you know? So I really hated it when Jamie brought it in. As I said, I felt as if they were trying to write Swamp Thing in their own comic.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks. Can we get another one in?
Okay. One more.
Hi, Chris from Durham.
Hey.
Besides being all around awesome, you're a champion of animal rights. It's pretty much what keeps me into
good, yeah. Good.
But from something huge, something big like Buddy Baker to V3 to even just a fight sequence in the Meatpacking District and Damien Hirst, back out. Is that something that you just
Good old back out.
Is that something that you just do to say, like, I'm gonna
introduce
it to people that don't generally think about it, or you just do it? Do you ever get flack for doing it?
I actually haven't ever been flagged from it, and you know, I don't really look for it, so maybe there has been, but no. I did it because, for the reasons you say, you know, I've got the opportunity. Damien's a popular character, wouldn't it be great to just suddenly expose him to this, you know, and see how he feels about it, and maybe that will affect some people who are reading it. So yeah, definitely, that's why I do that stuff. I think it's important to go constantly point over there, you know, and defend our animal brothers.
Does anyone ever say
that
you came to animal rights after?
I'm sure people used to say in the past, particularly in Animal Man, not so much recently, but I'd like to think, you know, that's happening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody who we didn't get to your questions. Sorry. Where are you going to be for the rest of the weekend? Are these people going to be able to track you down?
Yes, I'll be here. If you've got questions, just come up and ask me in the halls.